Welcome to the Zebra Blogs Before and After Furniture Refinishing Podcast. Hello, my name is Lane Ball, your Zebra podcast host. Today's podcast featured several artists: Amanda Nielsen, Jim Sharif, Sarah Bolton, Amanda Degelman, and Jen Fisher discussed their Best F category wins in our final interview of the 2019 Zebra Golden Brush Awards category winners. Our monthly features on the zebrablog.com are back, and we are excited to feature Lauren Swicino with Portland Rose Studio. We learn more about Lauren, but she also takes time to share tips on making the most of Facebook Marketplace. In our newsworthy segment, we speak with Sarah Little, Courtney Weisel, and Jeannie Pope about another opportunity to get recognized as a refinisher. Stay tuned, and we hope you enjoy. Well, we hope you all have enjoyed the conversations with the category winners as much as we have. Today, we finish up with the four category winners remaining. We'll be speaking with Amanda Nielsen of Then and Again Furniture Company, Jim Sharif of Forgotten Gems, Sarah Bolton of Sitting Pretty Home Decor, and Amanda Degelman and Jen Fisher of Vintage Sisters. Hello, award-winning refinishers. Welcome and congratulations on winning your categories.
Thank you, Lane.
Hi. Thank you.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. I'd love to find out where each of you are from and what you like about where you live, if you want to add that in there. Let's start with Amanda Nielsen.
Okay. Hi. I live in Utah. I've lived here my whole life. I still love the mountains. I never get over how beautiful they are. So that's probably my favorite.
Yeah, I bet so. It's beautiful. I've never been, but I've seen the magnificent pictures of the mountains. And so are you able to see those mountains from where you live?
Yeah, I kind of live in more of a rural area. So they're just, you know, not like right in my backyard, but they're, you know, pretty within just like 5 or 10 minutes. So, yeah.
Well, how about you, Jim? Where do you live?
I'm from Telford, which is in the UK. It's fairly a new town. It was only built 50 years ago. So we're surrounded by a lot of countryside, but there's, you know, a vast growing town also. So, yeah, we do a lot of nature walks and a lot of exploring. So that's good.
So it sounds like you live in a postcard too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is very pretty.
Yeah. Well, great. What about you, Sarah?
I am in the middle of nowhere, also known as Otisco, Indiana. I think we have a gas station. I think. I don't know. It might technically be the next town over, but it's very quiet where we are.
I take it your husband gets the gas for the vehicles then.
Oh, yes. Especially when I when I leave it on empty.
You run it out all the way, right? You make the most of the gallons.
Yeah. I frequently say, honey, I pulled in the driveway and it's on E.
He's probably just used to that, right?
Yep.
Oh, that's funny. What about you, Amanda and Jen? Where are you from?
We are from the prairies. So the city that I live in is Regina, the province of Saskatchewan, Canada. So we are the prairies in more western Canada. Jen is in a little town, well, on an acreage just outside of a little town called Silton. So she's about 30 minutes away from me. So I wouldn't call our landscape postcard material necessarily. It's maybe some people would. What do I like about living here? I don't know, Jen. Why don't you answer that?
I mean,
it's home for us, I guess.
Yeah, it's very small town. I mean, even Regina is not a big city, but where I am is out in the country too, so it's pretty quiet where we are. But it's an easy commute to the city. I don't know. I guess it's just because we're seasoned to this weather too. Like, I mean, we go from on Friday, it's supposed to be plus 11 degrees Celsius. So I'm not sure what that is in Fahrenheit, but it could be, you know, like normal temperatures for this year could be down to minus 40. So it can be like, yeah, snowing one day and then the next day it's melting. So it's been a kind of a funny winter that way.
I think it's been that way in a lot of different places. It's really been that way here in the South. Now, we don't necessarily expect to get a lot of snow each winter, but we've had virtually little snow, if no snow at all. I mean, what I mean by that, we haven't had accumulated snow. So it's been a little bit warmer than expected. You mentioned 11 degrees Celsius. Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's supposed to be really nice on Friday. So we're looking
nice for us here this time of year.
I have my handy little converter on my phone. And that's about 51 degrees. So that's nice.
That's
warm. When we get 50 degrees in the wintertime, when we get it in the wintertime, I mean, we're happy with that 50, 60 degree weather. So
that's shorts.
Really good.
Yeah.
You're right.
That's not the norm
for us. We could still have some snowstorms yet this year. Yeah. It's still early.
Well, and I think everybody down here is hoping for that to happen. I think everybody wants at least one big snowstorm, and because we haven't had it, everybody's sort of eager. But
and we're over it. We're ready for spring.
Yeah. Well, before we get started, I want to remind our listeners that if you would like to view these pieces while we discuss them, feel free to go to thezebrablog.com and you can click either on the Zebra Golden Brush Awards tab or you can click on the podcast page and the pieces featured today will be highlighted. Let's start our interview with the winner of Best Farmhouse Style, Amanda Nielsen with Then and Again Design. This category was described as antique, distressed, farmhouse vibe. This piece is so unique. I don't think I have ever seen anything like it. It has a shelf on the left side that is taller than the right side. And the right side has like a little cupboard that almost looks like a little secretary desk. Mm-hmm. It has tons of chippiness on it, but you see more of the bare wood than the paint. Well done, Amanda.
Thank you.
Tell us about this piece. And let me just say this too, because I read that there's an interesting story behind this piece. So why don't you share that story first and then the process?
Okay. Yeah. So I saw it on Marketplace, just scrolling through it. I can't remember how much it was listed for, but it was a little more than I wanted to pay. So I offered her maybe, I don't know, $10 less. And she said, yeah, you can have it. I was all set up to go get it. And then I had to wait or something to get one of my kids. I couldn't get there right away, maybe like an hour later. And she messaged me and said, I sold to someone else who offered me full price. And, you know, I'm sure most of the girls have been there. You know, that happens.
Yes.
Sometimes. Yeah. So I was bothered, you know, cause this is a piece I kind of wanted to keep for myself, but I got over it. And then like a week or two later, maybe she messaged me again, the same lady, and said, I actually regretted selling it to this other person and she bought it back from her. And then now she wanted to sell it again.
That's so weird.
I'm like, I've been there, you know, I've changed my mind a lot on things. So I understood, you know, so I said, okay, well, do you want to sell it to sell it to me again? And she felt bad. And I got it for even less than I had offered in the beginning because she felt bad about how she had kind of sold it out from under me. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of the story. So I ended up getting it and
You were like, you were meant to have this piece, weren't you?
I know. And I thought about it for a few days afterward because I had the perfect place for it. I kept this one. It's at the end of my hallway and it's kind of, you know, a bigger hallway, but there's two bedrooms to the side of it. So it can't stick out too much. And I knew it would go perfect right there. And then when she had messaged me back, I had already found another piece to go there, of course, because I, you know, can't sit still when I have to have things there. So I had to sell the other piece and switch things around and I made it work. So.
So you got this piece home. What did it look like? And tell us about the process you went through to refinish it.
Okay. Yeah, it had kind of a door on there that I could tell wasn't original to the piece. You know, it just looked kind of off. So I took that off and my original plan actually was to paint it. You know, I paint everything. It's mine. I can do what I want with it. So I paint it, you know, even most people are like, don't paint it. But the more I got into it, the more I looked at it, I thought I just can't paint this. You know, I just decided to not paint it. So I actually added the shelves. The shelves weren't there. So, and I knew I wanted to display, you know, some quilts or books and stuff like that. So I decided to add those shelves and then just kind of sanded, you know, wore a mask, of course, and sanded off so there's not continuously chipping paint, you know, all the time. Mm-hmm. So I cleaned it up, sanded it, and then I used just some some, I don't know, wax or salve, and just kind of cleaned it up, made that original wood shine on the front, and just kind of, you know, got it new looking again, but still, you know, a lot of charm to it.
I assume that was the original hardware that came with it?
Yeah, that was original. Yeah. So this piece I didn't do much to. It's just a lot of cleaning. You know, I did add the shelves and I sanded it and made it, you know, made it look nice. But yeah, the little piece on the right side does open. And I'm assuming it used to have a mirror. I've seen some other pieces similar to this. And I think it used to have a mirror or like another shelf on top and then a glass door of some sort on the left. But I kind of like, you know, how open it is. And I don't like anything glass because I usually break it. And so I don't have glass in my house usually because I just break it.
We've all been there.
Yeah. So if it has glass, it's like it will get broken, which I broke on another. I've broken several pieces of glass. So
now, do you think this piece was more of a bedroom bathroom piece? Like, what do you think the original intention was for this piece?
I want to say it was, I don't know if it would be called a secretary or like a wardrobe, but I'm assuming it was for like an office type, because that piece would fold down and like office type materials or like whatever. Cause I've had a couple people send me, you know, cause a lot of people were drawn to this piece and they liked it and they said, oh, I have one similar I want to show you. And so I've got a few pictures from people that show me kind of what their piece is in a different condition. And it seems like, you know, the one part on the side, you know, folds down for like, you know, your, what do they call those, quill? Is that what it's called? Where they dip it in the ink, you know, back.
Oh yeah.
Back in the day, whatever they had, you know, they didn't have laptops back then. So if you're dipping the quill. Yeah. So whatever they had to use, that's what I'm guessing. I'm not too good at knowing, you know, specifics on certain pieces, but yeah, that's what I'm guessing.
You said something about paint. Did it have like old chippy paint on it when you got it?
Yeah. So the front picture, it kind of looks more like the right side is there's no paint on it. I think someone probably tried to strip it and then they gave up because stripping is the worst. So that's what I'm guessing that they did. So yeah, on the left side, most of the shelving area is painted, and then the exterior of it is painted, but then that front piece. And I think that's what I kind of liked is like, you kind of get the best of both worlds. Cause a lot of times you're like, I don't want to paint this cause the wood's so pretty, but I do cause I like paint. So, so I think this one, it's, you kind of get the best of both worlds. Like you get your chippy paint and then that pretty, you know, piece on the right side there.
That's cool.
We have noticed since you posted that piece that a lot of other furniture painters have used your piece as inspiration for their own similar project. So I think that is a huge, huge compliment to you and to this piece specifically, that so many people were so wowed by it and wanted to replicate it.
Thank you. Yeah, I know. I was actually kind of nervous. You know, you still kind of second guess yourself when you're posting and you're like, oh, no one's gonna like, you know, I like it, but like sometimes I post, I'm like, oh, I should have painted it, no one's gonna like it, and then it just like blew up. I'm like, well, I guess I made the right choice, I guess.
Oftentimes it is that gut decision, isn't it, that you go on that first, like, I think I should leave it as it is and just clean it up. That's cool. Well, congratulations, Amanda. It's fun to hit a home run in the decision-making and refinishing process.
Yeah, thank you.
Share your Instagram account for those that would like to follow you.
It's just Then and Again Furniture.
Well, our next feature interview is with Jim Sharif, winner of the Best Clean and Classic category. This category was described as simple, classic, one color, no distressing. Jim's piece is really unique, at least to those for us in the States. Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, but is this more of a buffet than a dresser?
Yes, I suppose it is.
Well, it has doors on each side with an opening in the middle and a drawer above the opening. It's painted in a neutral color, and it fits the category perfectly because it really is clean and classic. Tell us about this piece, Jim.
This is an antique piece, which I bought originally from the marketplace, which I don't ordinarily buy my pieces from there because I don't know, you know, if you've seen my previous pieces, but I go for a lot of the carved, ornate kind of antique pieces, which are, they're quite difficult to come by on there. But yeah, I picked this one up there, which was relatively cheap, and fell in love with it straight away. It was very shabby, and I did have to put quite a bit of work in to get it looking this nice and smooth. But yeah, I got there in the end, and I was really happy with the outcome.
What paint brand and color did you use?
I used Fusion's Putty, which is quite a beige grayish, depending on the light.
It's really beautiful color. And the legs, is that more, were the legs stained or was that also a color?
I wanted to stain the top and the legs originally. That's what I had in mind for it. But, you know, with most of these antique pieces, the top just wasn't salvageable. And so I just went with the feet, which I was quite pleased with in the end. It turned out okay. But I did actually stain. I used a driftwood, I think, on the feet. Mm-hmm. And I think it was nice to just try and have that contrast rather than, you know, doing it all in that one solid color.
You mentioned that the piece was in pretty rough shape when you got it. Was it painted?
No, it wasn't painted. It had the old varnish on, but the hinges are gone and there was a split in the top. And it was just really old and tired. And yeah, it just needed a lot of TLC to bring it back to what it was originally. And I think that highlighting the details also kind of made them stand out a little, whereas that had been lost, I think.
When you get a piece like this, that has a lot of layers of shellac, varnish, top coats, what's your process in stripping it? Is it a lot of sanding or do you use a chemical? What do you go through to get that off?
I just sand. Really? It. Uh-huh. I can't be doing with the chemicals. It's it's too much. I know sanding can be hard work, but going through all the stickiness and the relayering, and it feels like too much hard work. So it's just a case of sanding for me. Mm-hmm. So I just literally sanded it, well, cleaned it, sanded it all back, repaired where I needed to, as much as I could, and then primed before painting.
Now, do you still have this piece or have you already sold it?
No, it sold. it sold quite quickly, actually. I think you have those pieces where you think, oh, you know, this is going to be a good seller. And then you hold on to it for weeks and weeks. And then you have those pieces that you think, oh, well, this is nice. You know, hopefully this one will sell. And it surprises you and it sells straight away. So I think you never really know, do you? But yeah, it sold pretty quickly. I was pleased.
It looks like a heavy piece. Is this pretty difficult to move?
Aren't they all? We're constantly just shoving this furniture around. I mean, I have to do a lot of it on my own because my husband works through the day. So when the couriers come and they're dropping the furniture off, and I'm just like, oh, just leave it there because I literally can't get any more in. So, and I don't want to go through the embarrassment of saying, well, I've already got three sideboards in the entrance. So yeah, I just tend to leave it there. And then as soon as the van drives off, I'm, you know, kind of hoiking it in. So on my own. So yeah, they're all heavy. The antique, which is what I like, you know, you can tell a good quality piece, can't you, from the weight, I think.
Yeah. Well, you guys need to be careful. This is probably true for all of you. You guys need to really watch your backs. Hopefully you got some good back supports. Man, that's, you know, I mean, you know, that is, it's probably a difficult thing because, you know, you get your piece in and you want to get started on it and you don't want to have to wait for somebody to help you. But you guys do need to be careful because I know that sometimes you don't realize damage is being done in the process. So just a little friendly reminder there to protect your bags.
One time Jen and I were unloading a buffet out of, I don't know, the truck or my vehicle. I don't even know. And think I tripped on our garage floor mat and I fell backwards on my butt and the buffet landed.
Oh my gosh.
It was a big French provincial.
Oh, it landed on my left hip. And oh gosh, yeah. I just, like, Jennifer just gave me that look and I just burst out laughing because I just couldn't believe that happened and it hurt so bad. But, and I had a big bruise there too. But yes, the things we do, right, to get these big pieces of furniture. Now we're a little bit better with using furniture dollies and making sure the garage mat's not late. Yeah. But yeah. So I think we've all had incidents where we've injured ourselves.
When we do need eyes in the back of our heads, right? Well, I'm glad you're okay from that fall. That could have not been good. And I'm glad you're able to laugh at that sort of thing. Not everybody can do that. Oh, man. Well, Jim, your piece is really stunning. Tremendous job refinishing it. Share your Instagram account for those that would like to follow you.
Yeah, it's Forgotten Gems _ Chic.
Well, our next feature interview is the winner of Best Multicolored Piece, Sarah Bolton of Sitting Pretty Home Decor. This category was described as a piece with multiple colors, of course, whether it's two colors or 45, from blended to freehand and drawings. Sarah's win is a tall secretary desk painted in a dark blue with green interior. Now, Sarah, what is the deal with you and secretary desk? Just a reminder for our listeners, Sarah won third place in last year's Zebra Diaries March theme contest of greens, and her piece was a secretary desk. I must say, though, Sarah, this turned out really beautiful. So do you have a an affinity toward a secretary desk?
No, it is very much a love-hate relationship. And it started with that green one. That belonged to a client. It was her grandmother's, and it was like done in the 20s, and we did it in that green and black. And then this lady saw that piece and thought, I need one just like it. So she started hunting for a secretary and found this, I think at a thrift store, and contacted me on Facebook and said, if I get a company to pick it up, can they bring it to you? And I said, sure. I'd never met her. And she said, I just want it green, blue, and gold. And initially I was like, okay, that's what I had in my head. I'm like, I don't know about that. But, and she's like, just do whatever you want to it. I trust you. But she wanted green, blue, and gold. So I went with, Fusion Mineral Paint, Park Bench on the interior, and General Finishes Coastal Blue on the outside. The hate part of these secretaries is they're really intimidating. I mean, you have the arms that pull out to hold the desk, and you've got the doors and the shelves, and then I take the cubby out, which usually is held in with nails or staples in the back. There's all these working parts, but I sort of mentally, like, you know, deconstruct it as I'm working on it and just take it one part at a time. But the love part is it's so satisfying when you put it all back together.
Well, when she told you those color combinations, what was the process in working with her? Did you say, look, I'm looking at doing the body, the outside in the darker blue and the green on the inside? Like, how did that unfold?
Well, I didn't want to do green on the outside again because I'd already done that. I feel like it was an opportunity for me to, you know, do something different. Sure. And this was the room actually that it went in was really all very neutral. It was just, I think, all gray and white. So sort of wide open for me to do whatever. It's actually it went in a grandchild's room, but she doesn't have any grandchildren yet. She's just
she's very optimistic, isn't she?
Yes.
Proactive.
I think she thought if she like did the room, it would just happen. So a lot of times I don't meet these people. More often than not, I don't meet these people until I deliver their piece to them. So the anticipation is, you know, I'm like, oh, you know, like I send them pictures, of course, and I communicate with them through the process, but it is a little nerve wracking, you know. I'm like, I hope you love it.
Wow. Well, it really is pretty. How long did it take you from start to finish, roughly?
I think it was about 2 weeks. You know, we always take the glass out. A lot of times those are, speaking of broken glass, Amanda, I've broken so many pieces of glass trying to get them back in, that wood trim or the rubber seals. So we just use clear silicone now and just silicone the glass back in.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So, you know, taking the glass out, it had lights in it too. It was actually like a reproduction. I would say it was probably made in like the 80s. I mean, it was solid and good quality, but it wasn't an antique. Mm-hmm. But it had these really awful lights in it. So there was some wiring or unwiring that had to be done.
Does she know that this is an award-winning piece now?
She does. Maybe I should frame it for her and go put it in her nursery.
Yeah, well, you'll have to at least maybe do a color copy of it once it comes in.
Yeah.
We thought those colors complemented each other so nicely. As soon as we saw that, it was directly saved into our favorites because Jen has a medicine cabinet, is it? It's like a really tall, similar style, but not secretary, more of
it's a really old, like it looks like a farmhouse type. It looks like a built-in to me.
Yeah, actually, but anyways, that is what she kind of envisioned of doing something simple or similar to that. It was some inspo for us.
Oh,
for
that's
sure.
Awesome. Yeah.
And I don't have a question, but I have to say, I would never think of putting those colors together, but they work amazingly. As soon as I saw it.
Yeah, agreed.
Wow. Like it just has such an impact, doesn't it? But I would never think of putting green and blue together like that. But yeah, it turned out beautiful.
It agreed. Looks amazing.
Well, thank you.
Well, congratulations, Sarah. Incredible refinishing once again. Share your Instagram account for those that would like to follow you.
It is Sitting Pretty Home Decor.
Well, last but certainly not least, our best staging category winner is Amanda Degelman and Jen Fisher of Vintage Sisters. Their winning piece was of a refinished MCM desk stage with an old typewriter, crumpled paper, old clocks, baskets, and books. And it looks like an old dictionary or encyclopedia on the floor.
It's an old dictionary, yeah.
Got it. Well, really fantastic, Amanda and Jen. I first want to say to our listeners that you need to go to their Instagram account as well and check out the before on this desk. Really great transformation. I mean, the desk, what it was before and what you did with it is pretty amazing. So they'll share their account shortly. But you guys have to share the details on this piece as well as the staging process.
Absolutely, absolutely. Jen, you start. You go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So this one was a waterfall, I guess. One of those, it's kind of like almost a dime a dozen where we are kind of. It's not a typical or it's not a true antique, but it's old. And we picked it up at an estate dispersal that was close to my acreage. So it was one of those deals where it was like, take the more you take, the better deal kind of thing. So it was like by the truckload and not so much like all furniture, but a lot of awesome, awesome staging pieces that we came away with from that. And so this wasn't even one of those things that we left with that we were like, oh, this is awesome or nothing like that. It was just kind of like, oh, okay, well,
part of the deal.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it could be in a kid's bedroom or, you know, we didn't have a plan for it. It sort of was at the back of one of my C-cans.
So one of many.
Yeah. It sat there for a while. It was like, most of the time we choose our piece of furniture first and then we decide on a paint color like next. And this was the opposite in that case. So we were selected in September for the Country Chic Lustrum Paint Challenge and they chose the paint color. So as they were, I think there was 20 colors. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking through the colors like, oh yeah, I hope we get this color.
You all got the hardest one, I think.
You know, it was just one of those things.
So many people said
like,
to us, that was the one they were scared to get.
Yeah, and like a lot of our friends were like, you know, wow, I'm not in love with this color. It's not the, you know. So anyways, we were just trying to think
Sorry to interrupt, but this is funny. My 8-year-old son had said when I was telling the kids about it, because I was so excited. He's like, Mom, like, what if you get a poop brown? Is what he said. And I said, well, I'm going to have to try to make that poop brown pretty, yeah. I guess.
Whatever you say, you were like, Mom can make anything look pretty. I guess. Is what you said.
And you did.
And so to Harlan's defense, it's not a poop brown. It's called canapé. It is a very nice, warm, neutral tone. So anyways, with that, we were just like, okay, we have to find something to make more of an industrial look, I think, because it's not a feminine.
That's the vibe we kind of got, yeah.
So we're like, okay, well, what do? So we pull this guy out of the sea can and dismantle it. So, like, there was a big piece of, molding sort of under. Sometimes there's a drawer in between there, but it wasn't. It was just a big piece of,
molding,
I guess it was. So we pulled that off just to make it a little bit, like, a nicer, cleaner line. Give a little bit more leg room, so it was more utilized, I think. Mm-hmm.
More comfortable.
Yeah.
Because, like, a lot of these old vanities don't even have proper leg room, or you can't even fit a stool underneath them properly a lot of the time. So it helped open it up a bit.
I think people must have been a fraction of the size they are now.
Clearly, right?
I don't understand that.
I know. Everything is so short.
Yeah, some vanities are so petite, there's no way.
Yeah.
Like, you would even be able to put that under. So yeah, the fronts of the drawers, I remember there was some lifting veneer. That was one of our
right.
things.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We pulled it off. Like, you're like, oh, this isn't that bad of shape. And then it was like the whole back of it we pulled off was lifting wood too. And we replaced the back. And so anyways, the hardware wasn't, it wasn't going to fit with our vision. So, being that they were larger drawers too, we thought, well, what can we use for?
We need to fill the space.
Yeah, like a little bit larger handle without it being too chunky. And these little card pulls, like, they look just, a lot of people are using them right now and they look, we kind of felt like it looked a little more office-y. Yeah, it's just like kind of making it more desk-like than a vanity. So
it was a combination of Hobby Lobby knobs and card catalog plates from Amazon.
Yeah.
That's how we did that. And then it did help fill the space because the drawers are quite large. Like, a little knob would have just looked, I think, odd. So it helped. And then also, too, in a lot of our pieces, but especially this one, we always love to have wood showing. I mean, unless it's damaged or, in really rough shape, we try to incorporate some of the natural wood. So this one had some stains and it was pretty rough on the top, but we did sand it. I think the majority of it sanded out. Like, the top was pretty.
Yeah, the varnish kind of crumbled off. And
yeah, it was an old, crumbly, dried out varnish. And so then it stained nicely and it just kind of helped add just one more element to it.
A little nicer for wear and tear too.
And too, yeah.
Instead of having the painted top, we're finding, like, if it's in your own home and you have, like, somebody, like, if it was my daughter, it's like every surface had, like, nail polish on it or glitter or something on it.
Scratches.
At least this way it's a little bit better for...
You can disguise it more and put some... I think we put a nice matte poly on it, too.
Yeah.
So it looked good.
A nice matte, yeah.
I like that matte, too, because it's funny because when you guys were talking about the color, I was like, man, I really like the color. The color is, like, it's great. It's funny how subjective color is, isn't it? But, I mean, I was, like, really drawn to the color.
It was, like... After it was all put together, yes, but when you initially get the paint, you're like, oh, geez, okay, what are we going to do here?
Thanks for the challenge.
It was a challenge for us. Like, definitely a challenge.
But. Well, I guess you probably were thinking it's not necessarily an exciting color.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But it worked out well.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, just all the different elements and the things you did to it. And that's the reason why I was saying the mat. Like, I wouldn't have liked that. At least, making an assumption here, but I don't think I would have liked it had you put, like, a shiny finish on it. Mm-hmm. But having a matte finish, it just plays really well with sort of the masculine appeal.
Yes.
Of the entire piece.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You guys obviously work well together, unless those crumpled up papers were thrown at each other and they just ended up in the final staging photos.
That was all for the staging. Okay. All of this staging, all of the items that we used in this picture kind of all had their own little story. This was a fun piece to stage for sure. I mean, the little stool in here was from the same estate, so in the same truckload, essentially. And the lady from this estate was originally from Missouri. So a lot of the items in this home she had brought with her. So that's pretty cool for us up in, you know, Western Canada. So that little stool was Missouri Public Schoolhouse, I think. And there was a little plaque on the inside of the frame.
Yeah.
So I made sure not to paint over that. But then we painted and stained this stool specifically for this picture.
Really?
And it turned out so great. And so I know I kept it. I couldn't part with that. We couldn't sell it with the desk. And so then, I mean, the typewriter was obviously the perfect fit. These things are so heavy and awkward to use. I'm sure you guys have all staged or have seen one, but it kind of fit the space perfectly. And then, yeah, we added the baskets, which are actually really cool swim locker baskets, and that have nice little black brass plates on the front with the numbers, the locker numbers. And then those, along with the clocks, we got at a vintage market from some ladies who have now become our friends from this sort of thing. And then the dictionary, like you mentioned, the crumpled papers, there's an atlas on, it's kind of hard to see in this picture, but on the left side, there's a old vintage atlas leaning over the desk. And a lot of these items we got from this really cool estate sale. In the wintertime, it was this a lady professor, and it was in an old wartime home. And we had to stand in line at 6 a.m. It was still dark. It was snowing. And you stand in line with a bunch of strangers, but you get to know each other because you start seeing the same faces at every sale. And then it was probably one of our favorite sales to date because she just, there were so many antique books and French novels and just piles and piles of sheet music. And then this atlas. And so that's, you know, where we got a lot of our favorite staging items and that we used for this picture. So a lot of these items kind of are cool and unique each on their own. So putting them together with this desk, I think it kind of helped.
Well, create a story.
Yeah, create a story. And I think another thing too for staging this is we really wanted to also use similar colors. We needed to complement this color. We didn't want anything to stand out. So basically we wanted to use more neutral items and lots of metals to also give it that industrial vibe. So yeah, we wanted this picture to basically complement what it was used for once, what it could be used for in the future, but also kind of tell a story. Cause that's kind of what we were going with for, I would say.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, phrasing it that way because it's really what you did here, and I would imagine it is an art when you think about it. I mean, there's so many elements to refinishing, but then the staging aspect of it is hugely important as well because it's the final appeal of this piece to potential buyers.
Well, yes.
Yeah, and I would imagine what's involved too is like that fine line of knowing where to stop. You know what I'm saying? Where maybe you've done too much.
I know. Yeah. And I think too, because we wanted to keep the desk as the focal point, obviously, because that's what we're trying to sell. We're not trying to sell the staging items so much, obviously. Right. So yeah, we still wanted to try and make sure the desk actually stood out first.
Well, you did a masterful job on that because what you said about the desk standing out, I mean, that's what happens. But I think the longer you look at it, the more it's like, you know, like the Finding Waldo, you start looking for these, where's Waldo? And you start looking for that. You really look into the pictures and you're like, oh, what a cool clock that is. And those, you know, the atlas to the side and the baskets and the dictionary and the stool. It's just, it's really, really neat. Very, very nicely
done.
Thank
you. Thank you. We had fun. We had fun doing this one.
Well, I do want to ask you this as well, in conjunction with having talked about that, how do you guys work together as sisters? Because you both probably bring maybe different, maybe you have a lot of common commonality with talents, but then what about some things that are unique? Like, how do you work through that?
Jennifer constantly is telling me to stop micromanaging her.
sometimes it'll be like we're really good where it'll be one person's rolling and one person's going around with the brush, and it'll be like, she'll be like, oh, you didn't go here, and I'm like, I haven't even come to that side, just zip it and just, you know, go on your side and I'll come around. This is how we do it. And then, but sometimes it's funny because our husbands will say to us that we're really irritating to be around when we're talking furniture because we talk in this our own language and we talk above each other, but we both know what we're saying. But sometimes, like, we'll message each other about something and I'll be typing it at the same time as she's already said it or vice versa about something. And we're like, oh, I was exactly thinking that. Oh yeah. Bang on, you know? And then other times we're not with, you know, we don't have the same vision. So sometimes it'll be like, if one person's taking the photos, sending it to the other. And then it's like, oh, actually just turn this a little bit this way or add this or take this away, or that it's like, no, this is over, the lighting's bad, you know, start over tomorrow. Yeah. But it helps having another person's eye with it.
I was just thinking that. I was like, I would love to have another person looking at my stuff. And
yeah, like, so that's, I think that probably helps in some ways too. Like, it definitely depends if you have the same style that way. And I mean, our houses are different. Manda's got a lot more of the modern touches in her house, where we both have quite a bit of old antique style. Items that we've
accents and decor, yeah.
But yeah,
I mean, I for the most part, we work quite well.
Yeah,
And it's usually depending on, you know, if it's a custom piece, if they drop it off at Jen's house, then we work at her house. If it's at my place, then we work at my place. So it's really kind of 50-50 that way. But generally, every project is done together for the most part.
Yeah, we try to do a lot of them together, and
Jen is really good at finding the pieces. She's really good at, finding them, whether it's on Marketplace or Virage or getting some inside contact. She's really good at finding the piece, whereas I'm the type of person that would see it on Marketplace or somewhere and I'd sit and wait.
And she always says, oh, let's watch that one. No, let's watch it get taken by somebody else. That's what. And so, it's like, no, let's watch it make the move.
So,
it's a sale.
So we definitely each have our strengths.
Yeah, you don't get anywhere by just watching, do you?
No. I think sometimes for me, I'm just lazy, like, oh, I don't really want to drive all the way over to that place and haul it home. And my garage is so full of stuff already. My husband hasn't been able to park in our garage for the 5 years we've lived here. So that's a goal is to get it cleaned out, but I don't think it'll happen. I think he's accepted it.
Sounds lofty.
Well, maybe he's taking that as your way to try to get him to open up the doors into maybe a studio somewhere.
Well, I know we always refer to our garages as our studios and our husbands just laugh at us, but essentially, yeah, it's just a garage, but it's heated.
Yeah. It works, does the trick.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I have some shop cats, Mandy doesn't.
But... yeah, that's right.
Oh, man, and Jen, nice work from refinishing to staging. Share your Instagram account for those that would like to follow you guys.
Yes, it is at Vintage Sisters SK.
Well, great. It's been really exciting to have all of you on today. We can't congratulate you enough for your hard work on these pieces, and you certainly won the admiration of your peers to have one in your category. So congratulations, and thanks again for joining us
today.
Thank
you so much.
Thanks for having us, Lane.
Thank you so much for having us, Lane.
Yes, thank you.
Well, as you can imagine, we have had our hands full the last few months hosting the exciting Zebra Golden Brush Awards. It has been so much fun, but as that has come to a close, we're looking forward to our monthly featured artist again. So with that, it's time to announce our featured artist for March 2020 on the zebrablog.com. Our artist has been in the refinishing business for almost 5 years. She has received tremendous success on several levels, from running her own refinishing business to opening her own shop. She was among five other judges on the Zebra Golden Brush Awards and is a judge for the monthly Zebra Review. She is wife of what she refers to as a patient husband, the mother of three young boys. She is none other than Lauren Swachina of Portland Rose Studio. Welcome, Lauren. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good. And you nailed the last name.
Ah, good.
Perfect.
Very good. Well, a huge thank you, Lauren, on behalf of the Zebra Crew. We know it's challenging making tough decisions each month, and so we appreciate you and the rest of our judges.
I love doing it. Thank you so much for having me, and it's always fun to see what people come up with.
Yeah, it's inspirational in many ways, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Now, where are you located, Lauren?
So I am in Kaukauna, Wisconsin, about a half an hour from Green Bay. That kind of puts it in perspective a little bit. Just a little small town.
So that's why you're a cheesehead.
Yes. Yes, I am. I'm very close to Green Bay.
Very cool.
We actually moved here. I was in Milwaukee for almost 15 years. And so even though we've been here almost 6 years, it's still a little bit of adjustment, but finding new things to like every year that goes by, there's more and more to like about this area.
So it's a pretty small town in retrospect.
Yeah, we've got, I want to say, let's say 13,000. So not super tiny, but compared to Milwaukee,
yeah,
you know,
right.
It's, yeah, there's not as much available at our fingertips, but it's a very beautiful area. We're actually just a few blocks from the Fox River, which is a major river throughout Wisconsin. And we're just a few blocks from a nature preserve. So we've got eagles all over and, you know, so much wildlife that obviously you don't find in Milwaukee. And so that's something that I've really grown to just love about this area is how beautiful it is.
Yeah. And you do a good job on your Instagram account, not only showcasing some of the rooms in your home and how beautifully you decorate it and design it, but, and of course your furniture refinishing pieces, but it's cool to see some of the landscape, and you'll sometimes feature an older home in the area. So it really is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a neat area. Tell us about yourself and your family.
So you mentioned my patient husband. We've been together coming up on 11 years. We've been married for about 7.5, and he is actually an elevator mechanic. So he's not at all interested, I guess, in, you know, home decor or antiques or refinishing, but he is very, very supportive of me, and he puts up with a lot. You know, I'm always coming at him with, you know, I had a thought, or I was thinking, and, you know, there's always kind of a long pause. I gauge his reaction. So he's a huge supporter of me, though. And I have three little boys. My oldest is Portland, and he is 5, about to be 6 this summer. And then I have Rowan, who is going to be 4 just in about 2 weeks now. And so that's where Portland Row comes from, Portland and Rowan. And then we had our surprise. Our surprise little baby is 7 months old, and he is Gabriel, and we call him Gilly or Gilly Bean.
Wow. Now, how's the dynamics on the three boys? I mean, I suppose the two older boys, I mean, are pretty excited to get a little brother.
You know, it's funny. The oldest, Portland, loves him. Could not get enough of him. The middle child is a little, he wasn't as excited. He was used to being the baby. So he loves him, but it has been a little bit of an adjustment. And but yeah, they're all great. They're loud and rambunctious, and it's kind of crazy to think how loud it's going to be in a year or so when they're
that's right.
when they're all over. But it's
yeah,
fun.
As they continue to grow up. But that's neat because they're pretty close in age, especially the two older ones. So
yeah,
that'll be a lot of fun. Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun seeing them grow up together.
Absolutely.
Well, tell us how you got into furniture refinishing.
It really started right after Portland was born. We closed on our first house 3 days after he was born.
Wow.
So yeah, and so it was a lot of big changes all at once, and that's when we moved here to Kaukauna. So I found myself in a brand new city with a brand new baby and a brand new house, and really was just kind of alone. And I had a lot of time during naps and a big house to fill. So I started buying furniture off of Craigslist mostly at that time, because Marketplace wasn't really a thing. And while he was napping, I would just kind of do it for fun and, you know, started to really enjoy that process.
Did you have any creative abilities, or was this one of those things where it just showed up unexpectedly when you started doing the refinishing?
I've always had Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I'm actually more like musically inclined, and I've always really enjoyed art, but never been like really good at it. I actually in college almost switched my major to interior design. So I guess I have always been interested in creating. I was actually enrolled into a different school to transfer over and start doing that. And the last minute I don't know why. I just chickened out or something. So I guess it's always been there. And this has really been finally like that outlet for it. It's kind of all come together, I'd say.
So what is your background before this?
Oh, well, I started going to college for religious studies. Actually, I wanted to be a youth minister. And I think that lasted about a year. And I switched to psychology. So my bachelor's is in psychology, and I have a minor's in women's studies. And then I got my master's in urban special education. So kind of a mixed bag of experiences. And I did actually teach for a little over 5 years in Milwaukee. And yeah.
What a great accomplishment, though. I mean, really, to have gone and get your bachelor's and then to get your master's and then the boldness really to, you know, to follow your interest with respect to refinishing and design. It's interesting, you know, as we've talked to a lot of different refinishers throughout the last few years and just the similarities in that, not necessarily in the studies, but just in having gone off to college, you know, gotten your degrees, and then realize there was other interest that you would like to develop further and that you maybe enjoy in a different way. So that's really cool to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, with respect to the name, you mentioned your boys and where Portland Rose Studio came about. Yep. But I do know that you had a name before that. And tell us a little bit about that name and where that came about.
Sure. Yeah. So I started off as Rose and Bee Furniture. And to be honest, I didn't put like a ton of thought into it. It kind of just came to me one day. My grandma's name was Rhoda, which she hated. She hated her name. She would tell anybody who listened. But the one thing she loved about it is that Rhoda means rose. And she would kind of get that little spark in her eye when she would say that. That was her pride in her name. Mm-hmm. And my husband's grandma, her name was Eleanor, and everybody called her the Queen Bee. So I never actually met Eleanor, but I have heard so many stories about her. And, you know, anytime anybody talks about Eleanor, it's just with such love and kind of excitement about what a wonderful woman she was. And so I just wanted to sort of draw inspiration from those women, but also tying to the history. You know, in refinishing furniture, you're getting these old pieces and you're giving them life and they have this history. And so I was really looking for a name that was sort of rooted in the past. So when I decided to change my name, it was because my focus now is on my children and really is focused on the future. And it just seemed kind of a fitting transition.
Both are really cool names. I mean, Rose and Bee Furniture and then to Portland Rose Studio. It's neat that history is there of the two names. And, you know, because sometimes you change a name because you just don't really like it. It doesn't really fit within what you're doing. But sure. It makes sense that you transitioned into this new name, but the older name, it's really the sweet that the meaning behind those two names, Rose and Bee. But that's really neat. Thanks for taking the time to share that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let me ask you a few questions with respect to refinishing that I think a lot of listeners would like to hear and learn about you and certainly glean from you in regards to these questions. But what would you say your biggest obstacle that you faced when you went from refinishing to actually starting a business around refinishing furniture?
Well, I have to be completely honest. I really started off so haphazardly that I was very naive to any obstacles, and I've actually experienced probably more obstacles going on is that I did in the beginning. I, like I said, I had been kind of refinishing things for myself. And really on a whim, I said, you know, I'm going to try to do a piece and sell it. And so I, you know, bought a piece off of Craigslist, got new knobs, got the whole thing, priced it way too cheap, put it on Craigslist, and it sold within an hour. And literally that same day, I said, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be a business. I'm going to be awesome. This is great. Like, I was so optimistic about it. And I think that that really that same day is when I came up with Rose and Bee Furniture. I did this silly little mock-up of a logo, and I just went for it. You know, I started mostly doing things for people I knew. I mean, I started a Facebook page and got the attention of, you know, some cousins or some, you know, friends. And it grew pretty quickly in the beginning. And so, yeah, I feel like I came onto the scene, if you will, at a really good time, that there wasn't that many people doing what I was doing. So now I think the obstacles going forward have been that so many people are doing this now. And, you know, kind of finding your own voice and your aesthetic in the sea of refinishers has been something that maybe is a bit of a struggle.
Yeah, it's more competitive in some respects, but it is neat how the industry has grown and so many new friendships have been developed and a lot of gleaning from one another. But obviously, as an industry grows, it makes you more competitive in many respects. Mm-hmm. But it's cool, too, because it does refine you at the same time. I think everybody kind of goes through a refining process.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did anybody ever discourage you? And I don't necessarily mean in a negative way, but I mean, trying to, you know, harm you in any way, but I mean, with respect to just, man, you're a psychology major, you got this educational background, do you really want to go this direction? Did anybody kind of throw those warnings out to you?
Maybe not, you know, like you said, not in so many words, but I think, you know, when we moved here, I had, you know, just finished up a year of teaching. We moved here during the summer, and I think there was always kind of that expectation from everybody and from me that after, you know, the baby was a few months old, that I would go back to work. And I think that was always the plan until all of a sudden there's this baby and it just made life different, obviously, you know. And so, yeah, I think in that first year or two, there was a lot of, so when are you going back to work? When are you, you know, have you been looking at schools? Have you been doing this? And I think it took a long time to kind of prove that this is a good fit for me, that I, I'm happier doing this. I can give more to my kids. I, you know, I'm a better parent if I'm a happy parent. Yeah. And I think now some of those same people who said those things in the beginning have been very vocal about, you know, how proud I am that I didn't listen to them.
Yeah, that, well, that's very good that they would say that and admit that. Yeah. And I think a lot of times those warnings, they're meant only to, out of concern, right?
Absolutely.
Because they're not really sure, wait a minute, because it's a risk to do that, but
it's a huge risk. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's great that you took those steps. And, you know, and as you mentioned earlier, you were so motivated and passionate, excited about how things unfolded that you just kind of got swept up in it in a good way. So that's neat. With respect to starting, when you think in starting a business, sometimes we get kind of caught up in the doing of the business with respect to the art, you know, obtaining the furniture, refinishing it, buying the paint, you know, making all those decisions. Mm-hmm. But there is a business side of refinishing businesses, right? So was there anything in the business side that you were like, man, this is a real challenge? Or did that as well kind of unfold naturally? So, you know, running a business really hasn't been too bad. What's your thoughts on that?
That's probably actually my biggest struggle is the business side of it. In the beginning, I was very, like I said, my first piece, I think I bought the piece for $40, bought all the paint, bought all the knobs and whatever. And I think I sold it for like $85. I mean, just ridiculous. In my mind, I was like, oh, that's almost double. And I mean, it just wasn't, you know? And I was really bad at, looking at how much profit I was actually making on things. And I still struggle with that because my passion and my artistic side does take over, where I, you know, often maybe buy too many things for the studio or spend a little bit more because I'm trying to create, you know, this beautiful aesthetic that I still to this day have to tell myself to slow my roll and look at the actual profit margins and see what is actually benefiting me and not just making pretty things.
And making sure that you're, you know, you're efficient in the process, because that is a balance too. You're being creative and not rushing yourself, but at the same time knowing that, you know, if I spend, you know, 20 hours on this piece and sell it for X amount of money, then it's not, you know, because I would think that's, you know, when you see the, you know, you have to buy the hardware, you have to buy the paint, you know, those are tangibles that you see and you see the cost on that. Sometimes we don't take the time to look at, you know, I spent this many hours, roughly, I should be making about this much money on it, and that didn't pan out on that. So that's good insight for other refinishers as well. At least stop and take the time to evaluate to make sure you are making a profit, you know, especially if it's an official business and not just a hobby.
Right. And I think I've become much more discerning on the pieces that I get. I try not to get as many huge project pieces, which I did a lot in the beginning. I'm like, oh, this is $10. You know, it's falling apart, but it's $10. And, you know, like you said, 50 hours later, I'm still trying to put this dresser back together and it's not worth it. So occasionally, if a piece is really beautiful and is really special, but needs the work, you know, I'll take the chance on it. But I've definitely tried to be far more choosy about the pieces I get.
What's the hardest part of refinishing for you?
I'd say the hardest, like, tangible thing is veneer. Stripping veneer or, you know, dealing with any type. Yeah, it just drives me nuts. And I mean, I think I've gotten better and kind of learned the tricks of, you know, putting on a damp towel or using an iron or using a heat gun. But it's just one of those things that drives me absolutely nuts.
Yeah, very time consuming.
But I think in a more abstract sense, the hardest part about refinishing for me is finding that balance of creating things that other people like and will sell and staying true to what I like and what I want to create. Because oftentimes I think those things are different and it's a fine line, because I don't want to obviously make things that I think are beautiful and sit there forever because nobody likes them. But I'm not going to go out and, you know, do something that doesn't feel right or doesn't feel like it's a good fit just because I know it'll sell. So that's a challenge, I think.
What about the easiest part for you?
Oh, the easiest part is probably the staging, or at least the part that I like the best. I think it's because for me, it's, you know, you've seen your vision all the way through. You know, you've taken a piece that's maybe not so pretty and you've brought it back to life. But then the staging, I think, is what really brings everything together and helps other people see what you saw. And so that's always the most fun for me.
A lot of rewarding elements in the staging process in many respects, isn't there?
Right. Absolutely.
Do you do much commission?
I have slowed down on it quite a bit. I did quite a bit in the beginning, and I'll still do a piece here or there now. But I really like, I guess, kind of working at my own pace and my own schedule.
Yeah.
And I feel very stressed when I'm not sure how quickly I can turn over a piece, or, you know, the added pressure of making sure that it's exactly what they had in mind. So I'm pretty choosy about the commission pieces that I do.
What about shipping? Do you ship nationally, or how, or do you just sell locally?
I don't. I just sell locally. Yeah. I know. I have so many refinisher friends who have, you know, been so successful at shipping, and it just terrifies me. And I probably need to get over that, because I know it's, you know, brought so much success to other people, but anxiety.
Well, let's discuss a few of your pieces, Lauren. A note to our listeners, make sure you go to thezebrablog.com where you can learn more about Lauren and enjoy more of her work. The pieces we're discussing today will be on that feature as well as on our podcast page, also located on thezebrablog.com. Let's start with what you refer to as your favorite piece. Describe it for our listeners and tell us why it's your favorite.
Sure. So my, you know, I had a little bit of a issue picking my favorite piece because I don't typically do showstoppers. You know what I mean? I stick with pretty traditional pieces. I use a lot of neutral colors. And so at first there wasn't one that really jumped out to me until I thought about this piece. And it's an old buffet. It's got some pretty unusual lines on it. I don't know that I've seen a buffet quite like this one before. And I believe when I first got it, it was already painted. And it was like a gray, kind of like a tacky paint to it. And I decided, being still pretty new to the refinishing game at this point, that this was going to be my first milk paint piece. And I could not have picked a worse piece to try this on. I don't know what I was thinking. And at that time, I had just pretty recently developed a friendship with McKenna from Neat and Navy Blue. Mm-hmm. So if you guys don't know McKenna and Neat and Navy Blue, go check her out. She, at this point now, is doing just candles. But at that point, she was like my idol in the refinishing world. I had actually come across her in like a Facebook paint group, and she had posted a couple of her pieces that were just showstoppers. Her staging and her everything was so different than what everybody else was doing at that time. And I had actually written her because she had done this really cool, like, grain sack striped piece. And I just fell in love with it. And I wrote her and I said, I'm going to try to do the same thing. I would love to do a piece like that. I hope you don't mind. I'm not trying to copy you. I'll credit you in the idea. Because, like, to me, at that point, like, seriously, it was like talking to a celebrity, right? Mm-hmm. And she was so sweet and so nice. And we developed this friendship. And she was using all milk paint at that point, and I had never used it. And so with her encouragement and kind of her guidance, this was going to be my first milk paint piece. And it gave me every single issue in the book. I couldn't get the paint to stick at all. I couldn't get the top stripped off. It's like gooey gray paint. I had my dad helping me. My neighbor came over to see what the heck I was doing. Like, it was a mess. And when all was said and done, honestly, I was kind of over it. I just didn't even want to look at it anymore. I don't think I even posted it on my Facebook. I had a booth at that time. And so I took it to my booth, stuck it in there, maybe took a few pictures of my booth, and that was it. But then McKenna saw one of those pictures and absolutely fell in love with it. And I remember just kind of apologizing. I'm like, no, it's not that good. No, it's wonky. It's
Or did and you really?
Yeah. I was like, no, stop it. And she wouldn't back down. She's like, no, I'm in love with that piece. I need to buy that piece. So a few months later, I marked sold on it. She paid for it. And a few months later, she drove from Iowa with her whole family, came to Wisconsin and got that piece from me. And we've been like best friends ever since then. And there's so many things about that piece, you know, that it kind of was a confidence builder, I think. Because, you know, looking back, it was like, wow, I really made something kind of cute out of it. And even though it was really difficult, but also that it brought me, you know, such a good friend.
Yeah. What a cool story. And that I hope our listeners take the time to go out and look at this piece because it is very different. It's almost like a mix between a buffet and a dresser.
Yeah.
The way it's designed, but it looks, any idea on the age of this piece?
I am not entirely sure, but it's definitely handmade because the drawers were a little bit wonky and it had a lot of issues. And I do remember this has been a while now, but I do remember there was, you know, a signature on the back, a handwritten signature. So yeah, it was definitely a one of a kind.
Yeah, definitely a treasure.
And that picture is actually in McKenna's house. So she took that picture. Yeah. And that picture was actually what really made me fall in love with it when I saw that piece through her eyes, you know, and saw the beauty in it.
Well, this next piece we featured as a Zebra Weekly pick back in December. Mm-hmm. It is known for its legs. I don't think I have ever seen a piece like this. Tell our listeners about this project, what it looks like, and your refinishing process.
It's got some sexy legs on it, for sure. I think this would be like an Art Deco piece. So probably, you know, 1920s or so. And yeah, I mean, it's got, what, three drawers, I think, on the top. Uh-huh. But then it's got just as much legs as it does drawers. And yeah, it was so different from anything that I had seen before. I had a jump on it. You know, I know it's pretty trendy to leave the legs unfinished on pieces these days, but I've kind of moved away from that just because, I don't know, just because it's become so popular. But these legs, I had to leave them alone because they were just such a showstopper and I didn't want to cover them up. I wanted those to have a life of their own. And I kept, you know, the top pretty neutral because I didn't want to take away from the legs. I'd thought about doing like a bold green and just really making it a, you know, all around in your face piece. But I think those legs spoke for themselves. They didn't need anything else.
Well, it really does have great balance. But, you know, even though the legs have gotten so much attention, the top part as well, the way it's designed is so unique that it just all works really well together.
Right. Yeah. And for me, I usually go with far more simple pieces with not so many details like that, but it was just too unique. I just couldn't pass it up. And I actually ended up keeping the original hardware on it, which I rarely do. It did have some kind of more decorative deco pieces that went behind the drop pull. So I took those off just to simplify it a little bit, but I really liked how they worked with the rest of the piece as is.
What paint did you use on this?
That was Jolie paint, I believe, in linen.
Okay. Yeah, very pretty.
So really nice neutral.
Very nice. Works really well together. Well, we're going to chat in a bit about your experience and advice for shopping on Facebook Marketplace. But before we do that, I thought our listeners would like to learn a little more about your shop or studio from your Instagram photos. It looks like a really cool place with such unique farmhouse and cottage goods. Describe the shop for us and the items you carry.
Sure. So my studio is actually right here at my house. It is connected to my garage. I have a workshop space that we converted to be a little tiny shop. And that was one of those things that I mentioned earlier that I said to my husband after getting a few drinks in him. So I was thinking, because that space did not look like that when we started off. It was just a garage. So we put up faux shiplap and hung lights and get everything painted and get everything cleaned out and set up my little studio. And I do sales a couple times a season, just depending on how much turnaround time I need and how much time I need to restock. But yeah, I carry my furniture. I love carrying antiques and vintage. That's kind of my real passion is finding one-of-a-kind unique items. And then I supplement those with wholesale. So things that really stay true to my aesthetic. So a lot of neutrals, a lot of farmhousey, and like you said, cottage style. So a lot of chippy white things, grain sacks, ticking stripe. And so I really try to make everything go very well together, be it new or old, found.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be.
Do you advertise for your studio? Do you, like, when you schedule a time that you're going to open up, how do you get what's your process of getting the word out?
I advertise on my Facebook page a lot because that seems to be where most of my local people gravitate. I have a growing number of local people on my Instagram, but Facebook still is kind of the hub for that. So I'll advertise there, advertise on Instagram. And then I will put ads up on Facebook Marketplace, sometimes still on Craigslist, because you might still find a few random people who use Craigslist. And then it's a lot of word of mouth. I have people who come to every single sale And those people have started bringing their friends who bring their friends. So, you know, I never want to advertise too much because it is mm-hmm. such a small space and you never know exactly how many people are going to show up. I've had a few sales where I've been kind of bombarded, which is mm-hmm. good. But, you know, I like to keep the people who have been following me for a long time my primary and keep them happy.
There's something too about finding a place in your area, maybe that's off the beaten path. Mm-hmm. And when you do find it and you're like, man, this is really unique. And it's like, you're excited about it, but you don't really want to tell too many people right. because you don't want the secret to get out, you know? Yeah. So I'm sure there's a lot of that too, having this type of a studio.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Now I have to ask you this. Do you go in there periodically and steal from your shop?
yeah, I really try not to. I've gotten better about it. Occasionally, if something's been there for a while and it doesn't seem like it's going to be selling, but I really like it, I'll bring it in. But I've been practicing restraint as much as possible.
Yeah, I bet that's difficult because, you know, you're basing what you put in there on your own likes and you sort of your gut check yeah. on what's going to sell and what not's going to sell. And so I would think that would be, you know, kind of a challenge. Well, you certainly probably have options for when you have to get a gift for a friend. You can just run run into your shop and wrap it up and take it on, right?
I've definitely done that, yes.
Well, I think discussing your shop and studio is such a cool segue into talking about purchasing through Facebook Marketplace. Mm-hmm. You wrote a blog post on your site that provides really good detail. It's called Making the Most of Facebook Marketplace, and you give 5 tips. Why don't you walk us through those tips?
Sure. Yeah, it's kind of what's been helpful to me is really sort of training my marketplace. I found so many different things that are really unique and wonderful, and people always ask me, where did you find those? And when I tell them Facebook Marketplace, a lot of times I'm met with, well, there's nothing good in my marketplace ever. I can never find mm-hmm. anything. And, you know, that may be true because marketplace varies from area to area. But I've found that if you really put some work into it, you can get a lot out of it. So my first tip is being consistent. So checking it a few times a day, which I know sounds like a lot, but I'm talking about opening up your marketplace, spending 15 seconds on it, and seeing what the top things are. Because if you look every few days, let's say, so many of the good things come and go so fast that you probably miss them. So just being consistent. And if you're opening up your marketplace and you're not seeing something that's good, or you know, you're constantly looking and nothing ever catches your eye, you may need to train your marketplace. So what I mean by that is you have to go in and actually, you know, look for the things that you're interested in. So if you want antique dressers, mm-hmm. type in antique dressers and then click on every single one that you see. Because just like everything else these days, Facebook Marketplace is run by algorithm. Mm-hmm. So like Instagram and like Facebook, it shows you what it thinks you want to see. You know, really being consistent about searching for those things, clicking on them, and you'll start to see more and more things that are relevant to you.
So it's important to make sure that you click on it, because that's the clicking yes. of it obviously shows that you're opening up, shows you're interested in it, and that's what yep. is really triggering the algorithms.
Right. And even if it's something that you can see is, you know, $8,000, click on it if it's something you mm-hmm. think you would like, because they're not filtering by price or anything like that. They're actually looking at what you're looking at.
Gotcha.
Another tip would be to broaden your search terms. So if you're looking for, you know, an antique armoire, not everybody is going to call it an armoire. So mm-hmm. call it a cabinet, call it a, you know, a vintage cupboard, old closet, you know, use mm-hmm. every term that you can to describe that thing, and you're going to have more luck. And again, then click on those things. Now, this next tip is not necessarily, you're not going to necessarily be doing this as much for furniture, but just thinking outside the box, especially if you're looking for like antique and vintage items, not mm-hmm. everybody views those things the same. So they're not going to necessarily put it in the antique category or the furniture category. They may put it, if it's an old workbench, they're going to put it maybe in the tool category. Or, you know, really cute old garden stuff, they're going to be putting in the garden category. So looking in categories that you may not think of, you can find some really, really cool treasures doing that. And then this last one is a little controversial, but I called it my act now, think later, which, you know, is not always the best advice to be giving. But like I said, the really good stuff, at least here, goes so fast. And I'm talking about sometimes, you know, 5 minutes after being posted. So you kind of have to be armed and ready to go when you respond. And don't ask a lot of questions, you know, don't, because if the people are getting a lot of messages, they're going to go with the one that's most simple and straightforward. So, mm-hmm. you know, responding with, hi, I would like this. I can pick it up today or tomorrow. I can pay you in cash or I can offer you PayPal right now. And just be very direct and, you know, aggressive on it.
Yeah, because that's what they're looking for. I mean, they're looking to get rid of what they have out there.
Right. And, you know, so many people respond with, is this available? Is this available? You know, you kind of have to just get right in there.
Yeah. Show you mean business.
Yep. Yep.
And I would imagine that there's some fear maybe by those that are hesitant to purchase on Facebook Marketplace because if you go to somebody's home or you're going to an antique store, an estate sale, typically you're able to look at the piece in person. But if you're on Marketplace and you see a really cool looking hutch, for example, and you're like, yeah, I'd like this hutch. I can come pick it up tomorrow. Do you know anything about the terms of, or maybe there is no terms with respect to Facebook Marketplace, but let's say you go to get it. Mm-hmm. Let's say it's a $50 piece and you go and you look at it and it's worth, I mean, it's not even worth $5. I mean, it is much worse shape than what you expected. Number one, have you ever had that happen? And number two, what do you do? I mean, are you obligated to purchase the piece because you committed to it through the Facebook Marketplace process?
Right. I've definitely had it happen. Maybe not quite to that extent, but there's definitely been some things that, you know, maybe the drawers were really falling apart or it had a smell or, you know, things that you just can't see from a picture. So yes, those are, this is kind of where it gets tricky. Like, because you want to maybe ask those questions, but you don't want to get lost in the shuffle, like I said, by asking too many questions. I don't think that I have ever decided not to buy something after I've already committed, but I have occasionally said, you know, would you take a little less on this? But you have to be a little bit careful because you don't want people to be leaving you negative ratings if you show up and decide, oh, this is junk, I'm not going to get it, because they can rate you then as a lousy buyer. Okay. So it is a bit of a gamble, but I mean, if it's really something that was misrepresented or is just not going to work for you, I mean, you do have every right to say, thanks, but no thanks. This isn't what I was expecting. And I think that's fair because, I mean, they need to know for the next person who comes along, maybe you need to be a little bit more forthcoming about what you're actually offering here.
Yeah. And I think that's wise because as you mentioned earlier, you can always negotiate like, you know, hey, this has some issues with it was not conveyed, you know, on Facebook Marketplace. Would you be willing to take, you know, $20 less or $5 left less, whatever? I mean, it certainly wouldn't hurt to negotiate and they're going to know that too, I would think for the most part. That's really helpful. Now I have noticed that if you click on a piece that you're interested in, getting back to the algorithms that Facebook, you know, sees that you showed an interest in it. I think, doesn't it give you, like if the price drops, do you sometimes get a notice or how does that work? Is there any kind of follow-up that Facebook provides if you're interested in a piece?
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
I think once you've clicked on a piece, they do tend to keep showing you for one thing. And then there is a whole category that will say price drop. So anything that you clicked on that the price has dropped will show up there. I also find that it's helpful if something is a little bit out of your range to just save it. So then you can, you know, keep tabs on it. Like there's this really pretty chippy white cabinet that's been on mine for 3 weeks and it's dropped a little and I just keep watching it to see But yeah, Facebook does like to show you those previously clicked on items quite a bit.
And that's part of the challenge and fun of the process, isn't it? Keeping an eye out, kind of being on the hunt for a piece and watching the price get to the place where you're willing to nab it. Well, Lauren, this conversation has been so insightful. Lots of great inspiration for our listeners on many refinishing fronts. If you would share your contact information.
Sure. I am on Facebook and Instagram, both Portland Row Studio. And that's the best way to get a hold of me.
Yeah. And just as a reminder for our listeners, because Lauren is our March feature on our blog, all of that information will be out there. It will also be out there on the podcast as well, just in case if you're driving and listening. When you get back home to a computer or your office studio, you're able to click on that and link up. If you don't already follow her, please do, because you'll receive a lot of inspiration and insight from her. Well, thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk with us, Lauren.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Here at Zebra, our crew is determined to grow this community by creating platforms that provide opportunities for refinishers worldwide to get noticed. That's why we're so eager to host refinishing contests that do just that. Our annual Zebra Golden Brush Awards, our weekly contest, and our monthly contest called the Zebra Review. Well, we are excited to announce today that we have linked arms as well with another group of artists to bring to you a quarterly contest called Zebra Collective. There will be four contests each year that fall under Zebra Collective, and the themes will coincide with our seasons. Today, we have the pleasure of discussing the details with three of the judges: Sarah with Olive and Fern, Courtney with Steel Birch Studios, and Jeannie with Blush Vintage. Welcome, quarterly judges.
Hey, I'm excited to be here.
Hi, Lane.
Hi, Lane.
Hey, so good to have you on, all three of you. Well, Sarah, take a few minutes and tell us about this contest and how it works.
All right. So we are all super excited about this. So like you said, it's going to be a quarterly contest, and the themes are all going to coincide with the seasons. We are actually going to be announcing them on the equinoxes and the solstices, which is really cool. So we're going to do our spring announcement on March 19th. And basically for the theme, we're going to be looking for spring colors, any kind of design that kind of just has spring vibes to it, and also staging. We're going to take into account staging. So it's really pretty open as far as what we'll be looking for, but basically spring vibes, I guess, would sum it up. We're teaming up with a lot of really amazing sponsors for the giveaway. We're going to be doing prizes of first, second, and third place. And we have some really great prizes, and we're really excited to talk about them.
Well, what about the prize sponsors? Who do we have for spring?
Yeah, we have Schecto Interiors Milk Paint.
All right, and then we have Imagine Designs Hardware. They have beautiful, beautiful pieces, so we're really excited about that. And then Iron Orchid Designs is also contributing to the first, second, and third place. So we're very excited.
Yeah, we also have the Golden Hour Art. She's my friend Hannah, actually. Super talented, and she does prints of her artwork and also greeting cards and pet portraits. So she's going to be contributing something really fun to that. And something I love about her company is her proceeds are actually donated to taking care of feral animals in her area. And she also does an endangered species artwork section where the donations go to helping protect endangered species.
Well, you know, one of the neat things about hosting these contests is that we also get to include our paintbrushes in the prizes as well. So we're excited about that. This is an incredible wealth of contributors for this quarterly contest. And we've got a lot of neat companies that have decided to participate. And so you guys will learn more about that, especially on the 19th when we introduce this contest to you. But this certainly gives you an opportunity to start thinking about what kind of spring pieces that you can include and do. Well, I think everybody really enjoys hearing about the background of how things started. And I know a lot of furniture refinishers in the industry really enjoy all the many different contests that are out there. I know one that is really popular is called the Furniture Art Collective. It's hashtag Furniture Art Collective. Why don't you guys tell us about how that started and really how that then rolled into the Zebra Collective?
Yeah. So Sarah, my cousin, and I were just, you know, we've been doing furniture for a while, and those contests are so fun. You know, anytime that any of us have been featured, it's been like so exciting. So, you know, Sarah and I were just kind of brainstorming our own, you know, group that we could put together. And once we came up with the name Furniture Art Collective, it was just reaching out to other individuals. So Jeannie was one of the first people we reached out to, and she's such a great fit. And the other judges are Susie from The White Plum and Emily from 1379 Designs. And all of us, you know, have our own styles, but, you know, are super supportive. And we have so much fun every week going over, you know, who we're going to feature. And, you know, there's so much great work submitted. So it's definitely been an exciting venture on our end.
How long have you actually had the contest going?
Gosh, I think it's been, I won't say a year, but, you know, several months.
It was over the summer, I believe, that you reached out. So,
okay. Yeah. So we're going about 6 months or so.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's really good. I know everybody looks forward to those weekly highlights. Now, how did you guys go from Furniture Art Collective to Zebra Collective?
So I had the idea to basically take what we had at the Furniture Art Collective and turn it into something a little bigger, but less often than a weekly post. So kind of came up with the idea of something quarterly. And I had reached out to you, Lane, to kind of, you know, put feelers out there, see what you guys were thinking. If you wanted to collaborate, you were, you know, the first thought of reaching out to you because you guys are always so supportive and amazing when it comes to this stuff. So it kind of just blossomed from there. Like it went from, you know, quarterly. And then as we were thinking about a theme, I was thinking seasonal. And then with the equinoxes and the solstices, I thought that would be a really cool time to be able to celebrate the seasons changing and also be able to incorporate some creativity and design into that.
Well, I tell you what, spring is, I'd have to say, my favorite season. And so I'm really excited about this spring theme. Let's talk a little bit about more about this particular spring theme that we're going to start out with the Zebra Collective.
Yeah, spring is such an inspiring time because it's this big rebirth of everything's popping up green again. So I think it's a really great time for creativity to get going and be inspired.
I didn't ask you guys where you're from and what the weather was like, because I know that that's what I'm kind of known for doing, being a little bit obsessed with the weather.
I've been waiting for that.
but I am, because we're talking about spring. I am going to ask that now, because I was just going to say that in North Carolina, you know, when we look out into the fields and in the woods, we see daffodils popping up everywhere. And that's such a beautiful sign of what's to come, you know, because they always show up in March. And we know that spring is just around the corner, and all that new life, you know, with the greens and the flowers and the beautiful blue skies. So tell me, this may be a hard question, because I'm talking from North Carolina, where we get an earlier spring season. So where are you guys from? Let's start with Jeannie.
I'm from Chicago. So everything is cold and bare and kind of dead still here. nothing's popping up yet, but definitely looking forward to it.
Yes, there's hope, isn't there?
There is hope, yes. I've already done my spring trim down, waiting for everything to start budding.
Oh, that's good. What about you, Courtney? I know you're a little bit further south than I am, if I'm correct.
Yeah, so I'm in South Carolina in Charleston. The weather like really fluctuates during this time. So, I mean, today it's like sunny in 60s, but, you know, it really fluctuates. So it could be like rainy and a little bit colder tomorrow, but you know, it is on the uphill swing over here. So it's nice.
For sure. What about you, Sarah?
So I'm in central New York, New York State, by Syracuse, and it is pretty cold. Nothing's really going on as far as spring yet, But we've had a little heat wave this past week, and I did see some little crocuses coming up, but they'll probably won't survive. It's going to get cold again. But I will say I got bit by a mosquito working outside 2 days ago. So something's going on spring-wise here. Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Those mosquitoes are ready for spring, aren't they?
They're ready. Everyone's ready.
That's right.
Yeah, Mother Nature, you can keep the mosquitoes. Let's bring out the flowers.
That's not the sign of spring I'm looking for here.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about how refinishers can enter the Zebra Collective. What do they need to do to make sure that they get noticed to you, for you judges to review and evaluate them?
Yeah, so to enter, it's very simple. Just use the hashtag Zebra Collective, and that's about it.
Well, I also want to add that the winners will be featured on the podcast if they desire. We certainly encourage that because we feel like that a lot of folks will want to know the details of the winning pieces. And it's also an opportunity for people to learn different techniques as they share those details. And as well, those first place, second place, and third place winners will be featured on multiple accounts that are affiliated with this contest. So we're really excited about the opportunity for winners to be noticed, but also to continue to grow their business by getting more people interested in following them on their social media accounts. Well, stay tuned, listeners, as you'll see the graphics posted on social media next Thursday, first day of spring, and make sure you participate, as we just mentioned, by tagging your pieces with hashtag Zebra Collective. Make sure you spell zebra with an I. And we really appreciate taking the time, Sarah, Courtney, and Jeannie, to join us today and to give us the details of this exciting contest.
Yeah, we're so excited, guys.
Thanks for
having us. Can't wait to see your work.
I know, we're psyched.
Yes. Thank you so much. I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
Listeners, remember the Zebra Review Monthly Contest for March is open for entries. Make sure you tag all of your pieces that are painted in yellows and or greens that have been painted beginning January 2020. Use the hashtag TheZebraReview when you post. We have an incredible array of prize sponsors this month from D. Lawless Hardware, The Chippy Barn, Surf Prep Sanding, and our Zebra paintbrushes. We look forward to seeing your beautiful entries. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Zebra Blogs Before and After Furniture Refinishing Podcast. Today's episode is also featured on thezebrablog.com along with contact information for today's guest. Your comments and suggestions for future episodes are always welcome, and we encourage you to share those by clicking on the podcast slide in our header at thezebrablog.com. That's zebra with an I blog.com. Thanks for listening and happy refinishing.